February, Week 2, Monday. 1. Boy Scout Day. One day in 1909 in London, England, an American visitor, millionaire Chicago publisher William Dixon Boyce, lost his way in a dense fog. He stopped under a street lamp and tried to figure out where he was. A boy approached him and asked if he could be of help. "You certainly can," said Boyce. He told the boy that he wanted to find a certain business office in the center of the city. "I'll take you there," said the boy. When they got to the destination, Mr. Boyce reached into his pocket for a tip. But the boy stopped him. "No, thank you, sir. I am a scout. I won't take anything for helping." "A scout? And what might that be?" asked Boyce. The boy told the American about himself and about his brother scouts. Boyce became very interested. After finishing his errand, he had the boy take him to the British Scouting Office. At the office, Boyce met Lord Robert Baden Powell, the famous British general who had founded the scouting movement in Great Britain. Boyce was so impressed with what he learned that he decided to bring scouting home with him. On February 8, 1910, Boyce and a group of outstanding leaders founded the Boy Scouts of America. From that day forth, scouts have celebrated February 8th as the birthday of scouting in the United States.
Tuesday. 2. On accepting the Nobel Prize. Reading. I feel that this award was not made to me as a man, but to my work, a life's work in the agony and sweat of the human spirit. Not for glory, and least of all for profit, but to create out of the material of the human spirit something which did not exist before. So this award is only mine in trust. It would not be difficult to find a dedication for the money part of it, commensurate for the purpose and significance of its origin. But I would like to do the same with the acclaim, too, by using this moment as a pinnacle from which I might be listened to by the young men and women already dedicated to the same anguish and travail, among whom is already that one who will someday stand here where I am standing. Our tragedy today is a general and universal physical fear, so long sustained by now that we can even bear it. There are no longer problems of the spirit. There's only the question, when will I be blown up? Because of this, the young man or woman writing today has forgotten the problems of the human heart in conflict with itself, which alone can make good writing because only that is worth writing about, worth the agony and the sweat. He must learn them again. He must teach himself that the basest of all things is to be afraid, and teaching himself that, forget it forever, leaving no room in his workshop for anything but the old verities and truths of the heart. The old universal truths, lacking which any story is ephemeral and doomed, love and honor and pity and pride, and compassion and sacrifice. Until he does so, he labors under a curse. He writes not of love, but of lust, of defeats in which nobody loses anything of value, of victories without hope, and most of all, without pity or compassion. His grief weaves on no universal bone, leaving no scars. He writes not of the heart, but of the glands. Until he relearns these things, he will write as though he stood among and watched the end of man. I decline to accept the end of man. It's easy enough to say that man is immortal simply because he will endure, that from the last ding-dong of doom and clang has faded from the last worthless rock, hanging tireless in the last dread and dying evening, that even then there will be one more sound, that of his puny and inexhaustible voice still talking. I refuse to accept this. I believe that man will not merely endure, he will prevail. He is immortal, not because he alone among creatures has an inexhaustible voice, but because he has a soul, a spirit capable of compassion and sacrifice and endurance. The poet's, the writer's duty is to write about these things. It's his privilege to help man endure, lifting his heart by reminding him of the courage and honor and hope, and compassion and pity and sacrifice which have been the glory of his past. The poet's voice need not merely be the recall of man. It can be one of the props, the pillars, to help him endure and prevail. Wednesday, 3. Resignation Speech. Reading. This is the 37th time I have spoken to you from this office, where so many decisions have been made that shape the history of this nation. Each time, I have done so to discuss with you some matters that I believe affected the national interest. And all the decisions I have made in my public life, I have always tried to do what was best for the nation. Throughout the long and difficult period of Watergate, I have felt it was my duty to persevere, to make every possible effort to complete the term of office to which you elected me. In the past few days, however, it has become evident to me that I no longer have a strong enough political base in the Congress to justify continuing that effort. As long as there was such a base, I felt strongly that it was necessary to see the constitutional process through to its conclusion. That to do otherwise would be unfaithful to the spirit of that deliberately difficult process, and a dangerously destabilizing precedent for the future. But with the disappearance of that base, I now believe that the constitutional purpose has been served, and there is no longer a need for the process to be prolonged. I would have preferred to carry through to the finish whatever the personal agony it would have involved, and my family unanimously urged me to do so. But the interests of the nation must always come before any personal considerations. From the discussions I have had with congressional and other leaders, I have concluded that because of the Watergate matter, I might not have the support of the Congress that I would consider necessary to back the very difficult decisions and carry out the duties of this office in the way the interests of the nation will require. I have never been a quitter. To leave office before my term is completed is opposed to every instinct in my body, but as president, I must put the interests of America first. America needs a full-time president and a full-time Congress, particularly at this time with problems we face at home and abroad. To continue to fight through the months ahead for my personal vindication would almost totally absorb the time and attention of both the President and the Congress in a period when our entire focus should be on the great issues of peace abroad and prosperity without inflation at home. Therefore, I shall resign the presidency effective at noon tomorrow. Vice President Ford will be sworn in as president at that hour in this office.
Thursday, 4. Candidates. Reading. Three guys are finalists for one position with the CIA. The candidates are told that for the last phase of the selection process, they will need to bring their wives in. We need to know some things about your home life, they are told. No problem. All three men bring in their wives the next day. The three wives are placed in separate rooms, as are the candidates. The CIA interviewers go into the room with the first candidate. Sometimes CIA agents are asked to do things that seem wrong to them. We need to know for sure that your conscience will not get in the way of our objectives, and that you'll be able to carry out whatever task we ask of you. With that, one of the interviewers pulls out a gun. Go into the other room and kill your wife. are the instructions he gives. "What, are you crazy?" he responds. "I've got two great kids, and I love my wife. You can keep your stinking job." And with that, he takes his wife and removes himself from consideration. The agents approach the second candidate with the same explanation and instruction. "You've got to be kidding," he exclaims. "We've been married for 30 years. I couldn't be happier with her. Screw you and your job." And with that, he takes his wife and removes himself from consideration. Finally, the agents approach the last candidate and give him the same explanation and instruction. Instantly, he darts out of the room with the gun and into the room where his wife is. 6 quick shots are fired. After a brief silence, the agents could hear all kinds of crashing noises. Finally, the candidate emerges from the room all frazzled and bloody. "What happened in there?" the agents ask. The candidate responds, "Some idiot put blanks in that gun. I had to strangle the bitch."
Friday. 5. Valentine's Day. Valentine's Day is a celebration of love and lovers. The root of Valentine's Day goes back to ancient times, when people paid honor to the Roman god of fertility. This was known as the Feast of Lupercalia, and was celebrated even then on February 14th. The traditions of Valentine's Day are broad and many. It is a time to exchange cards or small gifts. Chocolates and jewelry are the big hits of this holiday, as are romantic dinners. It is a romantic event for lovers and a fun event for kids and family. Many a couple become engaged or wed on this day. For others, it is a day to fall in love. Did you know? While 75% of chocolate purchases are made by women all year long, during the days and minutes before Valentine's Day, 75% of the chocolate purchases are made by men. Over $1 billion of chocolate is purchased for Valentine's Day. Did you know? February 14th was formerly thought to be the first day of birds mating for the season. This sparked the custom of sending valentines to each other.